Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our conversation on the Book of Mormon, its real origins, continues with your questions and your comments. From the hands of, well, I should say from the pen of Solomon Spaulding, a work of fiction titled Manuscript Found, to gathering dust in a Pittsburgh publishing house, purloined by Sidney Rigdon, passed on to Oliver Cowdery, and then to Joseph Smith, is this how the Book of Mormon really came to us? Through this path, rather than from an angel from God to Joseph Smith by way of his divinely inspired translation. Those are two completely different claims about the origins of this book. Now, one might be right, one might be wrong. It might be the other way around. Both can't be true. That's certainly true. Our guests, Art Vanek and Wayne Cowdery, are members of Spaulding Research Associates, co-authors of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon. We have one open phone line here for you to join the conversation, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, and we can take your email here in the studio right now at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's talk with David, who calls from Vancouver, Washington. David, thanks for waiting. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. I'm calling about a statement that was made a few minutes ago saying that the Book of Mormon is the foundation of the Mormon Church, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I just wanted to clarify that. We actually don't claim that the Book of Mormon is the foundation of our church. We claim that Jesus Christ is the foundation of our church. And that is why we don't bear the name the Mormon Church, but rather the Church of Jesus Christ. And that should also clarify why it's not called the Church of Joseph Smith, but rather the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
But the Book of Mormon is the foundational claim of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is it not, David?
Well, you could certainly say that if you don't believe in the Book of Mormon, you won't believe in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You would certainly have to believe that where the Book of Mormon came from is true.
David, thank you very much. All right, so this is really the whole issue that we're dealing with, isn't it, gentlemen, that that the Book of Mormon plays this role in Mormonism as being the origin of the whole movement via Joseph Smith, and that if Joseph Smith was not telling the truth about where he got this alleged revelation, then nothing that follows is really valid. Is that the basic claim here, Art?
I've been hit several times tonight about the foundation of the church, okay? And it's my opinion that the book is the foundation because everything else just goes along with it, more or less. But I would like to point out that the book itself is based on these lost tribes of Israel and all this. And you have to remember, back in the 19th century, is a very popular theory that the Indians were a descendant of the Jews. And, of course, that's what helped trigger Spaulding's imagination to start all this writing. Because of his vivid imagination and his educational background. But what's happened recently is down in Australia, there's this biologist who incidentally worked for BYU by the name of Sutherton, was excommunicated because did a series of research and conducted tests, and he found that there's absolutely no connection between Indians and the Jews.
Yeah, he has done extensive DNA research, and of course the church claims that the excommunication resulted from some sexual improprieties on his part, but he maintains that the reason that the church excommunicated him is because he came out with this very important evidence that the American Indians are not, in fact, descended from the lost tribes of Israel, but instead have more Asian and Oriental origins, as has been taught in schools for decades.
David, stay on the line. I'm going to send you a copy of our Book of the Month for September, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon. We have its authors on as we're talking about the Book of Mormon. Thank you for your call, David. Up next from Independence, Missouri, another David. David, thank you for waiting and welcome.
Thank you. I belong to the LDS Church, not to be confused with the LDS Church. And I heard two things.
Are they not called the Community of Christ
yes.
now?
Well, I don't use that name.
All right.
Okay.
There were two things that I heard you say that I take issue with.
Okay.
One is that I don't know if you believe this, but you seem to imply that the Nephites and the other peoples
were
from the 10 lost tribes. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's not
that's
correct.
That's a common claim of the church.
Well, that's wrong.
All right, David, what's your other...
The second point is that, as you said earlier, it is commonly held by some people that the Indians came from the Book of Mormon peoples, and I don't know where that belief came from, but that has never been a logical conclusion from the Book of Mormon.
David, thank you for those concerns. We'll have our guests respond. First of all, is it or is it not a common contention in Mormonism, regardless of whether it's LDS or RLDS, that the Nephites and the other peoples mentioned in the Book of Mormon descend, that's the claim, descend from the Old Testament people of God, the Israelites?
Correct. You can go into several of the different educational books on Mormonism and find statements basically corroborating that. But what I would like to mention is that, you know, pretty much any discussion of something like this is moot if you follow what we call the Spalding authorship claims. Because if, in fact, Spalding did write the basis for what is now known as the Book of Mormon, it doesn't really matter what claims the church may or may not have made about the American Indians or pretty much the lost tribes of Israel, because if the Book of Mormon was based on what was meant to be a romantic novel about the American Indians, then pretty much the theology and the history and everything else of it is pretty much based on a lie.
Wayne, as a former Mormon, very quickly, were you taught that the peoples mentioned in the Book of Mormon were, in fact, migrated Jews?
That's correct.
So there's no doubt in your mind you weren't misunderstanding what you were being taught there?
No.
All right.
No misunderstanding.
All right, then Art's point is very well taken here as well, that it is not exactly relevant. What we're really talking about, who really wrote the thing.
That's right.
That's where the book is titled. That Paul calls from Midwest City, Oklahoma. Paul, welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
I got two questions. Thank you for taking my call, first of all.
Sure.
And my first question is, my mother actually just converted over to the Mormon Church.
Uh-huh.
And I had the privilege to go see her and visit one of the services out there in Dallas. And my first question is if the Book of Mormon is not divinely inspired, I haven't done much research, I'm not sure, but if it's not, since they do still use the Bible and their doctrine is, you know, it's pretty much, you know, it correlates a lot with, you know, the faith that, you know, the regular Christian faith. I was just wondering, what do you think God's standpoint on that would be? Would you think it'd be more of Joseph Smith there?
Let's get your second question in there, Paul, because our time is short before this break. Your second question?
Okay, my second question, well, I've noticed in my church, I go to a Baptist church, and I've been to, you know, Catholic churches and that kind of thing, and they all seem to have this, even you know, non-denominational churches, they all seem to have this thing where they think that, you know, they are the right way and no other church can be, you know, no other faith is right. And I've noticed that in the Mormon Church and the Catholic, all these churches that I've been to.
All right, we'll get a response to that on the other side of the break. I'll deal with Paul's second question there, and I'm going to toss his first question to our guest Art Vanek and Wayne Cowdery. They're members of Spalding Research Associates, co-authors of our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for September. Who really wrote the Book of Mormon? We've got a few free phone lines now since we've taken a couple calls. 1-800-730-2727 is our call-in number. 1-800-730-2727. So Paul asks this question. We'll get the answer on the other side. Even if the Book of Mormon isn't inspired, it sounds like the Bible. What's the difference? We'll be right back. It's safe to say that all the claims of Mormonism depend on the Book of Mormon, and in particular, Joseph Smith's claims about the origins of the Book of Mormon. If Joseph Smith's claims about the Book of Mormon are false, then Mormonism is false. So who really wrote the Book of Mormon? Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September answers that question. To order Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon, contact Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Mention Issues, Etc., 1-800-325-3040. Or go online to our website, issuesetc.org, and there you'll find the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon? This book is a fascinating study in the real history of Mormonism. issuesetc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Here's Issues, Etc. regular guest, Pastor Will Whedon, on why you should support LCMS World Relief.
LCMS World Relief is so important because it gives flesh to the love that Christ commands us to have. I'm reminded of the words from 1 John, where the apostle wrote, "Little children, let us not love with word or tongue, but in deed and in truth." And when you support LCMS World Relief, that is precisely what you're doing. You're loving in deed and in truth. You're providing food for the hungry and shelter for the homeless and clothing for the naked. It's a way that the love of Christ is actually incarnate and touches these people's lives, and it's just a wonderful thing.
For more information about LCMS World Relief, look for their logo at our website, issuesetc.org. Or call them, area code 314-996-1683. 314-996-1683. LCMS World Relief. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We have a free phone line, 1-800-730-2727. Someone can call and fill it up with a question or comment as we talk about the Book of Mormon. We'll get back to those phone calls in just a second. Paul had two questions. I'll deal with his second one. If I heard him correctly, he said, well, it looks like all Christian denominations, whatever they may be, claim that there's really no salvation outside their particular bailiwick of Christendom. That is simply not true. Even Roman Catholicism does not claim that there is no salvation apart from the Roman Catholic Church, not anymore at least, and I don't know of any other Christian denomination or confession that would make such a claim at all. Now,
Perhaps outside of some of the cultic ones.
Right, they will say, however, all Christian churches will say there is no salvation outside the Christian Church, and that's a very different claim, of course. Now, Mormonism takes it a step further, Paul, and that is Mormonism claims as one of its foundational teachings, and this is from Joseph Smith himself, and from the revelation he claims to have received, that all of Christendom is apostate from almost its very beginning, and that his efforts were to restore the true Christian church. There's the big difference. Now, the question to you, Art, Paul asks...
I'll let Wayne jump in on it.
All right, first. And Wayne, even if it isn't divinely inspired, the Book of Mormon sounds like the Bible, and it seems to have some overlap with the Christian scriptures. So how harmful could it really be? How would you respond to that, Wayne?
Okay, this is for Paul here. In our book, Who Really Wrote Here, we have made the distinction between the Bible and the Book of Mormon, and this separates the two forever. One is that from the biblical teachings, there's a law that's infallible that states that it's through grace and not your works. It's grace is what saves you. In the Book of Mormon and the Mormon teachings, it's the works that saves you. There's a world of difference between the two. And we made that distinction in the earlier part of our book. And it's vitally important for people to understand that. And that's a law that's absolutely infallible.
And the thing is, too, there are a lot of doctrines that sound or terms that sound similar. You know, like, you know, people will say, well, gosh, we hear about God the Father, we hear about Jesus, we hear about the Holy Spirit, we hear about baptism. It sounds just like every other Christian church. But what sounds the same isn't the same. The Jesus of the Book of Mormon is the spirit brother of Lucifer. And that goes against everything that is taught in the Bible. They also believe that man can become a god in the from the teachings in Mormonism. And that also goes against everything that is taught in the Bible. These two things alone, and like what Wayne said, where it's grace through faith. You know, when the thief was on the cross next to Jesus and he asked to be remembered when Jesus went into his kingdom, Jesus said to him, "Today you will be with me in paradise." He believed that Jesus could save him from his sins.
Paul, stay on the line. I'm going to send you a copy of our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for September, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon. It will answer your questions also in a fuller sense as well. Let's talk with Connie, who's in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Hi, Connie. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I just have a few comments. I was a Mormon for 23 years, and I came out of the church in 96. I saw the film The God Makers.
Uh-huh. And, from Ed Decker?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I've also read One Nation Under Gods.
Okay.
That's Abanus' book.
Yeah, and I listened to Hank Hinegraaff.
Okay, at CRI.
Yeah, and today I was confirmed a member of the Lutheran Church.
Well, God bless you.
And yes. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. And I've never heard about this before, this Solomon. I'm really amazed of all the information that I don't have. Because, you know, I've really thought I researched really well, but this is really interesting for me. And I was also sealed, I want you to know, I was sealed in the temple in 1985 in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
I know they do occult practices.
Uh-huh.
And you've already covered a lot of things that I was going to say, like they believe they can become gods.
Correct.
Gosh, there's so much stuff.
Now, Connie, let me ask you a question before we let you go.
Sure.
And I'm going to send you a copy of this book, too, because it sounds like your interest has been piqued, and especially as a former Mormon,
yes.
This will fill in some of the gaps that you may have found even in your own research. But the question I have for you is this. When you look at the Book of Mormon now, look back upon it and what you believed about it, if someone would have said to you, this was really a book of fiction, and Joseph Smith, through several hands, just got his hands on it, and capitalized on it, what would that have sounded to you like as a Mormon, when you were a Mormon?
As a Mormon, it would have upset me. Yeah, I would have been upset. I think what brought me out was the Word of God being spoken into my life.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's exactly. The Holy Spirit moved on me.
Connie, hang on the line there, and we're going to send you a copy of this book. It's so good to hear from you, and congratulations on your confirmation.
You know, if I could just interject briefly, you know, we wrote this book, and it's the second book that we have written on the subject. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, neither our book nor any other person's book is going to get anybody out of Mormonism. When it comes right down to the bottom line, it's going to be the work of the Holy Spirit working on the person's heart to pull them out of the false doctrine of Mormonism and bring them into God's truth.
That's a great thought there. Let's talk with Tim, who calls from St. Louis. Tim, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Good evening.
First comment was, I've always been taught that the Bible is the inerrant Word of God, and if that's true, what need do we have of any other book?
Correct.
Another
right.
thing is... I wasn't sure sure if this came from directly from the Book of Mormon, this particular Mormon belief, or if it was from something else, but baptizing the dead, if you could also comment on that.
All right, Tim, thank you very much. Let's take the second question for you, Wayne, since you come from Mormonism. Where does the teaching of proxy baptism for the dead derive in Mormon practice?
Well, as you know or may not know, they're very big on the family tree and the research of the family. Okay, this goes on a practice that they've done now for a long time. And let's see. They have the belief that their baptism for the dead is given a way out of eternal damnation through proxy baptism that they call a second chance. So this is something that, like I say, that they probably do about 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Now this takes place in temples all over
yes.
the world?
Yes, correct. That's right.
And Art, the question to you, what was Joseph Smith's claim when someone would say, I'm sure someone did say to him, hey, we have the inspired and inerrant scriptures of God in the Bible. What do you do bringing forth this next revelation? What was his claim about the Book of Mormon in answer to that response?
Well, it was part of his whole claim that all churches were in a state of apostasy. In fact, other early church leaders went so far as to say that all Christendom was the equivalent of the Whore of Babylon. Now, that's about as bad as it gets. And that it was Joseph Smith's task as the head of this new church to restore the gospel. And so he would say that his book, the Book of Mormon, along with revelations that he allegedly got from God, were his authority to speak to the people and to bring salvation to them. But if I could, I'd like to, just give you a verse for Galatians chapter 1, verse 8.
You've only got about 30 seconds here before
okay.
I break.
But even if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. I think that pretty much says it all.
Sounds like it's describing Joseph Smith's claims there. You know, these are great claims. These are grand claims that Joseph Smith made. And the rule is extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. The evidence seems to be against Joseph Smith's claims. More of your phone calls right after this. Todd Wilkin here, talking with Dr. Dean Wenthe, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Wenthe, tell us about Concordia Theological Seminary as a worldwide outreach.
We have at latest count, about 23 different countries represented on our campus. We have a full-time staff member teaching in Lithuania, another in Siberia, and then our resident faculty teaches regularly in Kenya, in Haiti. We just recently received an invitation to teach in Madagascar. So our commitment is to be a light on the hill and to broadcast the light of Christ into all the world.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit them on the web at www.ctsfw.edu.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Todd Wilkin here again. I'm talking with Pastor Mark Schaefer. He's coordinator of continuing education and related events for Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Mark, how can a layperson benefit from attending one of the fall retreats at Concordia Theological Seminary?
These retreats offer some specific training, like the one coming up September 30th and October 1st and 2nd is specifically geared for lay leaders of the congregation, people who are in the positions of president, vice president, elder, deacon, people who are in the position to, be leaders in the congregation can learn about what their role is and how they can work with the pastor. Also, there in this particular treat, there's a review of Lutheran doctrine. Who are we as Lutherans? What's our teaching? what of our beliefs, even talking about worship life of Lutherans. And so, and also there's a lot of opportunities to fellowship with other Lutheran Christians who are probably in the same boat, having some of the same struggles as leaders in the parish of how to deal with day-to-day running the congregation. So there's an opportunity to learn from the instructor and to learn from one another and to, you know, reemphasize what we are as Lutherans.
So do people who attend these fall retreats participate in the worship life of Concordia Theological Seminary?
Oh, yes. Every day there is chapel, and that is part of the schedule. We allow for the all the participants to go to chapel and to worship with the seminarians. And also, you know, they can oftentimes, if they're on, there's meals involved, they eat in the same cafeteria as the seminarians do. And so, yes, there's opportunity to interact with the seminarians themselves.
Finally, Mark, talk about the commitment of Concordia Theological Seminary to having an educated laity.
Yes, we're trying to offer these retreats and to encourage. We're hoping to get more people involved with these retreats. It's so important that, you know, the church, we have faithful pastors, but we also have faithful laypersons. The church can't exist without people. And the more that our lay people understand their role and how they fit in the church, you know, I think it's good for the church's mission. It's good for the church's service. It's good for the worship life of the church, too.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155 or our website, issuesetc.org. We're talking about the Book of Mormon tonight on Issues Etc. Our guests, Art Vanek and Wayne Cowdery, co-authors of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon. You can read an excerpt of this book right there at our website, issuesetc.org. Fascinating stuff. Or you can order Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. The book costs $16.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Now, when you call, make sure you mention Issues Etc. and ask for our Book of the Month for September, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon. Their number again, 1-800-325-3040. Michelle listens in Oklahoma City. Michelle, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, thanks.
Hi.
I was just calling to make a comment about what your caller Paul had to say. He said, you know, what would God say about the similarities between the Mormon church and the fact that they use the King James Version of the Bible to support their story? And Jesus answers that question for us in the New Testament. He tells us that false prophets will be brought up before us and that we're not to get sucked in to the teachings of their lies.
You are right on the money.
All right, Michelle, thank you very much. Excellent comment, and thanks for waiting on the line there. Art?
Yes.
Your response there, beyond mere agreement.
Okay. Elder Orson Pratt said the book must either be true or false. If true, it's one of the most important messages ever sent from God. If false, it is one of the most cunning, wicked, bold, deep-laid impositions ever palmed upon the world, calculated to deceive and ruin millions. I think that's a pretty good summation of what we have here in the Book of Mormon. Brigham Young says, we are in fact the saviors of the world. We are the smartest people in the world. Joseph Fielding Smith said that there is no salvation without accepting Joseph Smith. Now, it is my understanding from the Bible that prophets of God are supposed to be pure and holy men and set apart from the vices of the world. Yet, as I believe we brought up earlier, there was a time when Joseph Smith was brought into court and convicted of a crime called glass-looking in 1826.
What was glass-looking?
Well, that was a practice where Joseph Smith would approach an individual and say, I have been told that by an angel or something that there is buried treasure on your property, and by looking into my seer stone in my hat, I can reveal that treasure to you for a price. Now, let it be said at this point that nobody ever found any buried treasure. And apparently at one point in 1826, enough people got upset about this that they took Joseph Smith to court. Now, from 1830 all the way up through the 1970s, the Mormon Church maintained that that was a bunch of nonsense, that there was no court record, and therefore Joseph Smith never had anything like that happen to him. And Dr. Hugh Nibley, in his book, The Myth Makers, said that such a conviction would be the most damning evidence against Joseph Smith, the most devastating blow to Smith ever delivered. Well, the actual court docket with Smith's arraignment and conviction was discovered in the late 1970s by Reverend Wesley Walters. So if you take that together with the other evidence that we have brought forward, it would say to me in very strong terms that Joseph Smith was not truly a prophet of God.
If we were dealing with any other figure of history, and if we could somehow separate Joseph Smith from the religious movement that followed him, after, I'm talking historically followed him.
Okay.
And if we were just looking at Joseph Smith as, say, an odd character in upstate New York in the 19th century, what we know of him of, as you mentioned, court documents, eyewitness accounts, what would we conclude about him? If Mormonism didn't exist, what would we conclude about Joseph Smith as a person?
Well, I would say from the multitudes of testimonies that were acquired about Smith and his family, he was considered to be quite a ne'er-do-well. He was considered lazy, slovenly, looking for the fast dollar, looking for an easy way to...
He was a con artist.
That's what we call him in today's parlance.
Correct.
That's right.
Now, I guess this goes to the bigger question here for both of you. You simply are claiming to have uncovered and substantiated a suspicion and a complex of suspicions.
Correct.
That were really current at the time, not only about Joseph Smith, but also about the Book of Mormon. Were there people at the publication of the Book of Mormon who said, hey, wait a minute, this sounds familiar to me?
Well, yes, there were. In fact, one of the first times that the Book of Mormon was being preached, in the middle of the sermon, a gentleman got up at the back of the church and shouted out, "Old come to pass is among us."
Yeah, that was done by Aaron Wright. He was a justice of the peace. And in the midst of all the excitement, he stood up in front of everyone with his hand going way up in the air and said, "By God, old come to pass has come alive again."
Now, that's a reference to Solomon Spaulding.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Well, when they heard that, when they heard the manuscript or the Book of Mormon being read again, they all recognized it as old come to pass. As we said earlier in this program, that the kids and everyone, they used to call him "Old Come to Pass" because of the pausing phrase that he used to write his manuscript, "Old Come to Pass."
Did Joseph Smith ever publicly, that we know of, did he ever publicly respond to the suspicion that he had purloined this story from an author of fiction?
More often than not, it was his lieutenants. Sidney Rigdon basically went to his grave denying that he had any part in it, because more often than not, people went after Sidney Rigdon because he was the one who had the most fingers pointed at him.
Yeah.
Smith was an easy target because of his outlandish acts. But, you know, it might be said at this point that founding a church was not his first goal. He saw the Book of Mormon as his biggest and best scheme to make a fast buck.
Yeah, it was his big opportunity to get off the farm, you know.
And so the fact that
was hard work in those days.
So Wayne, since your research, was it simply another way of, say, I'm going to publish this and make some money off the publication?
That's correct. Well, you hit it right on the head. Yeah, he's going to make money. Well, he was going to get it all. I mean, he was going to have the money and a lot of other things here I won't mention. But it was a whole ball of wax. And for a while, he did have it pretty much of it. For a while, he did. But wherever they went, though, they always antagonized an awful lot of trouble.
Let's get to some of our email here. This is Dick from Lake Forest Park, Washington, and he writes this. Maybe 15 years ago, I purchased a similarly titled book that was supported by the late Dr. Walter Martin, The Bible Answer Man. But the book, and maybe the argument, fell off the radar screen, attacked, if I remember, by the Mormon Church, of course. Do you know what was the shortcomings of the previous work, and how does your book present the case more authoritatively, asks Dick Art?
Well, the first book was really very narrow in scope, although it included a brief description of Mormonism and Mormon doctrines and things like that. It concentrated primarily on a handwriting issue that involved some pages of the original handwritten Book of Mormon manuscript called the Unidentified Scribe. And what we decided to do in the current book was, instead of getting mired in endless arguments between handwriting experts, we decided to look at this instead from a historical perspective to try to find out who in fact did write the Book of Mormon. And so we spent the 12 years digging through private collections and endless libraries and university holdings and, the private papers of different places, even Masonic libraries and other places, in order to stitch together, in fact, the history of printing in upstate New York and New England as a whole. All of these different things to try and peel away the layers of the Book of Mormon onion, I guess, to try and get at, you know, who in fact did write the Book of Mormon, to try and put names together with places and dates and see if in fact there was some plausible way that this could be put together. And, you know, we don't mean to be in any way the ultimate answer. What we're trying to bring forth through our book is at least an equally plausible alternate explanation for the origin of the Book of Mormon.
Now, then, with only about 30 seconds here, and I want to come back on the other side of this break, perhaps if we could, to that handwriting evidence, but it sounds as though the criticism here really has to do simply with the historical record, and that is, are Joseph Smith's claims, verifiable in terms of the history, the eyewitness accounts, and everything that we have? This is just historical research. Am I right, Art?
Correct.
That's right.
All right. The Book of Mormon is our subject. Art Vanek and Wayne Cowdery are our guests. They're members of Spalding Research Associates and co-authors of our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September. Who really wrote the Book of Mormon? When we come back, more email as well. And I've got a couple other questions, especially about that handwriting evidence. 1-800-730-2727 is our call-in number. 1-800-730-2727. 10 minutes on the Book of Mormon right after this.
The niche specialty of LCMS World Relief, along with disasters getting at least 95% of the dollar given to aid victims, we are determined that that aid be very closely connected with local Christians, local congregations, so the connection between Christ and caring for people is one that remains together. That's who Christ was. He loved people, word and deed. That's what the church does, I'm convinced, on the basis of the New Testament.
That's Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief. For more information, look for the LCMS World Relief logo on our website, issuesetc.org, or call 314-996-1683. LCMS World Relief.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You are listening to Issues, Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues, Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues, Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues, Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
How would you like to meet Issues, Etc. regular guests Wesley Smith, Beverly Yonke, Gene Edward Veith, James Lamb, Bob Weiss, David Menton, and Nathan Jastrom all in one day? Well, they'll be speaking at the Image of God Bioethics Conference Friday, November the 11th at the Sheraton Westport Lakeside Chalet in St. Louis. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and join us as we broadcast live from the Image of God Bioethics Conference November the 11th in St. Louis.
+1 800 737 0172 is the phone number for our resource line. You can use that number to request a free complimentary copy of our next Issues, Etc. journal, or to help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. by making a tax-deductible credit card gift. The number again, 1-800-737-0172. Now, no gift is too small. You can also write us at Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. I understand that there's quite a conversation going on in parallel to tonight's conversation here on the radio at a table talk, and I want to say hello and thank you to everybody who are carrying on that conversation there as well. We've been receiving some calls from those who are participating online in that parallel conversation. So thank you very much. Christopher writes this from Indianapolis, and I think I'll direct this to Wayne. Is social ostracism the primary barrier preventing the average thinking LDS from objectively investigating his church's origins? If not, what other factors contribute to this phenomenon besides the general apathy that plagues mankind in general? Asks Christopher. Wayne.
You know, why don't you let me pop in on that one. I'm among other things, a co-moderator for a Recovering from Mormonism chat room. And if there's anything that I see a tremendous amount of is social ostracism. When somebody is even perceived as being interested in leaving the church, especially if they are in a heavily Mormon community, my goodness, their whole life can fall apart because the true believers they've been so brainwashed by the church that, you know, if you're questioning the church, you shouldn't be questioning the church. And if you leave the church, heaven help you, you know, you're practically considered a son or daughter of the devil, and people have actually had to leave states and go to other states in order to reconstruct their life.
Wayne, does that comport with your experience having left Mormonism?
Yes, absolutely. It's exactly what we were trying to say. I just want to refer back just for a moment to that question you were talking about handwriting. I didn't mean to change the subject.
No, please do.
Well, what's interesting to note, what I wanted to add to everything, especially with the handwriting, was that in the Calvary Family Genealogy book, they have pictures what they claimed at first were what they thought was the handwriting of Oliver Cowdery. They were samples. Well, I have my own personal samples that I've gotten from libraries of Oliver Cowdery's handwriting. And I knew when I saw that handwriting that it was immediately Solomon Spaulding's handwriting. And just to make sure, I had a professional handwriting expert, which is in our first book, identify that handwriting. And sure enough, it was Solomon Spaulding. So I ask you, what is Solomon Spaulding's handwriting doing in the Calvary Family Genealogy book?
That's a very interesting question. I wonder about this, because what fascinates me most about your work here is that so much of it has to do with primary source material. That is, I mean, in historical terms, the kind of bedrock research that historians do, letters, newspaper articles, eyewitness accounts that are contemporaneous to the events being studied.
Correct.
That's right.
Do you believe that there is evidence in, because the Mormon Church is famous for being, they're bookkeepers, really, in a lot of ways, of so many things. Do you believe that there's archived evidence that could be added to your research in Mormon hands?
Quite possibly.
Oh, absolutely.
We know for a fact that they have entire groups of people whose main purpose in life, whose job is to scour the country for anything and everything that has to do with Spalding or the Spalding family or manuscript found, anything that has to do with it. Rigdon's family history, Cowdery family history. And, you know, it's really interesting because we've uncovered this vast amount of data on Rigdon and Cowdery, yet none of the books that are published by the Mormons on either Rigdon or Cowdery, or Smith for that matter, have much of the material or any of the material that we have published in our book. And surely if we were able to uncover this information, couldn't they? And if so, why didn't they?
So they may know more about Solomon Spaulding and his manuscript of fiction than you two do.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. Up
it's
in the
possible.
I've heard up in the church vaults up there in Utah, they have information on Oliver Cowdery up there, volumes, but they won't release it. It's his own personal stuff, you know.
Also won't let anybody look at the unidentified scribe pages anymore very highly placed within the LDS Church.
So, and the significance of that is you contend the unidentified scribe pages are, in fact, copies
handwriting
from Solomon Spaulding's original manuscript.
Yeah, the manuscript found, that's correct.
Do you, I mean, this would be speculation, but would it surprise you to discover at some future point that in Mormon archives, they have they actually have the original manuscript of Manuscript Found.
That's it. Well, I don't know if they have the entire thing, but they have enough of it up there right now.
Well,
and it's been laminated. And like I say, I was up there with a professional handwriting expert in the height of the controversy, right? And they were kind enough to bring them out, and it was the last time that they were going to show them to anybody, so they say, or release them to the public. And that's when our handwriting expert identified it as Solomon Spaulding.
Art, what reason has been given for restricting access to unnamed scribe and to the documents that probably are of Solomon Spaulding's origin?
Well,
what happened? See, around the 1840s, eyewitnesses. See, where the place where Joseph Smith and Emma were living when they were getting ready to finish it as they were building it. They had a cornerstone, and he took the rest of that manuscript and put it into this cornerstone. Eyewitnesses saw this and heard him, and he said, "Oh, you give me enough trouble." So he put it into that cornerstone, and they sealed it up. And he just figured it through time that those pages would rot out. But what he didn't know was during the 1880s, about 40 years later, they came back, and they tore that place down, but they never forgot that he put those pages in that cornerstone. And when they retrieved them, they were still in very, very good condition. They were amazed. And so that's how they became the unidentified scribe, because they didn't know who wrote it or what.
They kept trying to match it up with the known handwriting samples of Rigdon and Cowdery and Harris and Whitmer and other folks. And those what, 12 pages?
Yeah, there was 12 pages of the unidentified scribe, and it was put out by BYU University.
It didn't match up with anybody. And so we engaged some handwriting experts who went up there. But to more directly answer your question, the reason why we believe that the church does not allow access to it anymore is because that first access back in the 1970s caused such a furor, and quite a few people left the church because of the findings in the first book. Now there was a controversy over the handwriting experts, And as I said earlier, we wanted to avoid that. We wanted to deal with, you know, solid, concrete facts, not opinions of masses of dueling, arguing, handwriting analysts in order to try to find out once and for all who wrote the Book of Mormon.
Art Vanek and Wayne Cowdery are members of Spalding Research Associates, co-authors of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being our guests, and thanks for all the work that you put in over the last several decades on this issue.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us on your show. We
really
appreciate it.
Thank you.
Folks, you can go to our website, issuesetc.org. You can find both an excerpt of Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon and the book there as well for your perusal, issuesetc.org. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Who Really Wrote the Book of Mormon. It's $16.99 plus shipping and handling. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Would it surprise anyone? A claim, and it is a great claim requiring great evidence to substantiate it, that all of Christendom had fallen to apostasy, and that the true Christian faith was not, in fact, what was brought to us in the Old and New Testament, but what was presented to us in another testament, the Book of Mormon. Would it surprise anyone that such a claim could be proven false, given enough time, given enough research, given enough tenacity? It doesn't surprise me. Well, it's not only a matter of an extraordinary claim lacking extraordinary evidence, but also of essentially a false claim, presenting a false Christ, finally being shown to be false. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.